Opening bell in about 20 seconds. Let me just set the stage for you.
Money, money, I want more money.
You cannot have it all.
This whole system is too confusing.
Hi, I'm Ben White, and this is Politico Money. All right, so 2019 may not look like a super promising time for bipartisan deals. But if Democrats win control of the House next month, the two sides could actually have an incentive to work together. Yes, believe it or not, there could be kumbaya bipartisan deals. And we're going to pick this apart this week with two of my great colleagues. Alana Shore is a congressional reporter for Politico. Alana, welcome, and thanks for taking time on a busy day.
Thank you.
And Megan Casella is a trade reporter for Politico Pro. Hey, Megan, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
All right, Alana, let's just do a little state of play. The conventional wisdom is Democrats are poised to take control of the House. Of course, in this political era, we have no idea what's going to happen, but conventional wisdom is that Democrats take control of the House. How's that going to look, given where you sit? Democrats taking control of the House, obviously Republicans probably still in control of the Senate, and Trump still sitting in the White House.
Well, it's going to be really important for House Democrats to pick their spots should they retake the majority in terms of where and how they want to compromise and cut a deal, not just because Republicans are likely to pick up seats in the Senate, so that further narrows the window of possible compromises they might be able to strike, but also because 2020 is going to start right away, and Democrats are going to have to ask themselves, will it help or hurt our chances to defeat Trump if we give him and us some wins? I think it's far from a sure thing to assume that they'll even want to work with Trump at all. But if they decide that they do, it's a matter of, you know, those one or two issues where you could actually thread the needle.
Yeah, I mean, I've always wondered, like, if they decide to not oppose Trump at every possible opportunity, given that, you know, 2020 will be right upon us, it will be just a couple of things that you will see them want to do. And you guys wrote a great piece on these possibilities. What are the couple of things, you know, top of the president's agenda that conceivably, theoretically, he might be able to work with a Democratic House on?
Well, the two biggest issues I'll be watching are infrastructure and criminal justice. And I think criminal justice actually has much stronger of a chance to get done here if it doesn't get done already this year than infrastructure. And the reason for that is that there's a lot of huge differences between the parties on how to pay for any infrastructure plan. When it comes to criminal justice, you have the stars sort of aligning in the sense that House Democrats, 134 of them, voted for Jared Kushner's criminal justice bill. So that's not a done deal. There are problems in the Senate, but it's a really good place to start, and it benefits everybody. It benefits liberals like Kamala Harris and Cory Booker to actually get a bill done, and it benefits the president because he's allowed his advisor and son-in-law to really take the ball on this.
Yeah. And then on infrastructure, I mean, this is something that, you know, markets have sort of hoped for, that, you know, Democrats like spending, they like infrastructure. Trump obviously likes infrastructure and has not shown himself to be particularly concerned about adding to the debt and the deficit. But at the same time, it's hard to see Democrats, Republicans reaching across the aisle to do a $1.5 trillion infrastructure plan, given the size of the debt and the deficit and the fact that Democrats won't want to hand Trump a big legislative win. Like, how do you handicap that? Should we just forget about it, like not even talk about infrastructure as a possibility in 2019?
I mean, if you ask me, I would say forget about it. Because, you know, frankly, I used to be a transportation reporter, and I remember I did a story in January 2017, right as this Congress started. And the dynamic hasn't changed since Trump took office. I mean, looking back to January 2017, before any of the Trump scandals happened, before any of the bitter partisanship and polarization, even then Democrats were saying, well, I think this White House just wants to do public-private partnerships, and we want, you know, real deficit spending on this. So I don't see how we get it done. And if anything, things have just gotten worse in terms of the ability to reach consensus since then.
And then the other thing you brought up, and Megan, I'm going to bring you in on trade in just a second because I want to talk about NAFTA, but you guys wrote about drug prices and bringing down drug prices, and that's something that the president has wanted to do. That's something that Democrats in Congress want to do. It's obviously popular politically across the spectrum to people who see their cost of drug prices going up. Do we have a chance for, at least early on in 2019, before we get into full-on 100% all-in campaign mode, for a deal to materialize on trying to lower the cost of prescription drugs?
Well, I mean, when we talk about drug pricing, there's a huge gap between the theory and the reality. There's certainly Democratic legislation up. You know, Peter Welch is the big sponsor in the House. But, you know, that is not something that Republicans want to call up, right? So in theory, yes, there's the potential to strike a deal. But in practice, what would the bill look like? The actual particulars, like I said, of the Democratic version are a no-go with Republicans who are going to pick up seats in the Senate. So much depends on how you actually write that.
Okay. All right, Megan, let's talk about trade for a second and the new NAFTA, the USMCA, as it is now known. It's going to have to go to Congress in the next Congress for approval after Trump has sealed this deal with the Canadians and the Mexicans. Do you anticipate that, say, Democrats take control of the House, that they will go ahead and go along with Trump and approve the new NAFTA?
I'm relatively optimistic. I don't think it's going to be super easy. I don't think they're just going to rubber stamp it and say, yes, this is a great deal. But my sense is that if they're able to work the implementing legislation in such a way that they're able to sort of make their own mark on the bill and maybe make it more enforceable and maybe tighten labor standards a little bit further, that then I'm optimistic that they will work with Republicans to pass it. I don't really envision House Democrats wanting to go into 2020 being known for the party that led to the fall of NAFTA. And, you know, especially after so much uncertainty over the past over a year of negotiations, I think they sort of want to preserve the trilateral nature of the agreement and not tempt the president to withdraw from it, as, you know, he threatened to do so many times.
Right. And there's stuff in here that the Trump administration negotiated, right, that Democrats would like in terms of, you know, higher wage standards and the idea that it's sort of aimed at boosting manufacturing in the U.S. and the USTR. Bob Lighthizer kind of worked with labor unions as they went along. So, you know, even from the start, if they don't get any changes, there's probably some sweeteners in here for Democrats, right?
Certainly. And that's like no accident, because U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer, as you said, was stayed in close contact with labor groups throughout the process. He was always sort of having an eye when he would talk to reporters after negotiating rounds, you know, having an eye to the reality that Democrats might take control of one or either chamber in 2018. And then, you know, sort of catering to that and recognizing, OK, we should put something on labor in here. We should put something on wages. There's something on currency manipulation that I think a lot of Democrats will like as well. And so, you know, it's definitely some people are priding Lighthizer on getting some stuff in there that Democrats have long called for. And Republicans are trying to say it might look hypocritical for Democrats then to reject an agreement that has a lot of their the things they've been calling for years in there anyway.
Yeah, and help me understand the ability to make changes in what the three countries have already agreed on. I mean, the way I think about trade promotion authority and getting these things an up or down vote in Congress, generally you can't really change the agreements. And then if they do, U.S. makes, you know, these changes, it would have to go back to the Canadians and Mexicans to agree to them. Do you have a sense for how that could work? I mean, can they really change what Trump agreed to?
To an extent they can, but to an extent they also can't. And so once they do sign this agreement, which we expect to happen at the end of next month, that'll be Trump and the new Mexican president, or the old one, depending on the timing, and Justin Trudeau. Once they sign that, they can't technically change the text of that agreement. But Congress does have to pass what's called an implementing bill or implementing legislation. And that is where they have some wiggle room to make some changes, to maybe ask for some greater enforceability, to maybe ask for, you know, tweaks here and there on the margins of the text. And Democrats are hopeful that they will be able to sort of make the mark on their mark on the agreement through that, by asking for something or other. And while it doesn't change the text itself of the new NAFTA, of the USMCA, it can change how something's enforced in the US or that sort of thing. And so there's tweaks, if not, you know, wholesale changes that they can make.
Right. And Ilana, what's your sense of, you know, Democrats on the Hill and their inclination to kind of go along with NAFTA and giving, you know, Trump a win on that? I mean, there's sort of two pieces to it. Do they want Trump to have a, you know, a signature achievement in a new NAFTA? And, you know, can they sell to their progressive base, who doesn't love free trade agreements, that it's a good thing to keep NAFTA in place?
Well, I mean, it's undeniable that Trump's populist approach to trade has changed the way both parties talk about the issue. And certainly, I think Democrats like Heidi Heitkamp and Tammy Baldwin, even though they will probably have opposite fates in this year's midterms, have learned that, you know, trade agreements just don't sell, even in states where it would seem like keeping the existing status quo, you know, helps their home state agriculture and manufacturing industries. These Democrats, I think, are getting surprised by the degree to which voters want to give Trump a chance to make good on his trade promises. But there's a big step from, okay, rhetorically, we need to ease up and try to give Trump some room, from there to, okay, let's, you know, vote to approve this agreement. Obviously, fast-track trade rules mean that Democrats, you know, depending on what happens in the midterms, might not have a lot of power to stop the train on this agreement, but it's nowhere near the hill yet. It's still on its way. So we'll see.
And we'll see what the partisan breakdown looks like after the election. And obviously, you know, anything can change between now and when this agreement finally makes it up to the Hill. And I just, and this is really for either one of you, but, you know, it seems like the incentives, there are a couple of incentives. I mean, one, to oppose Trump and not give him any victories, and everybody's setting themselves up for the 2020 run, and, you know, Democrats' skepticism of free trade deals. But, you know, if the vote comes down to, you know, it's a close margin, do you want to be the Democrat who kills NAFTA and sends markets, you know, tanking and upsets people who rely on an integrated supply chain? Like, I sort of feel like they might not have any chance, any choice in the end. I don't know if you guys think I'm wrong about that.
I think that's generally a widespread expectation as well, that Democrats don't want to take the fall, that many of them won't want to take the fall that way. And I remember talking to folks in the trade community, you know, several months ago, when things did look a little more uncertain as to whether they would wrap up the negotiations, whether Trump would actually withdraw. And several people started making the observation that we were actually seeing a high watermark of support for NAFTA in Congress. And that, you know, for as much criticism as the agreement had gotten for so many years, when suddenly it looked like it might go away and supply chains would be disrupted with, you know, unknown economic consequences, people started to say, okay, well, hold up a minute. You know, we might have criticisms of the agreement, but we also don't want it to go away entirely. And so a safety net and a way of making sure that we don't get back to that state is to pass this deal that they now have that, you know, in all is about 98%, 95%, whatever you want to say, of the same stuff as it was in the old agreement with just some changes.
Yeah. And one more thing on trade for you, Alana, and we'll let you go soon. I know you've got deadlines and actual Politico work to do. On trade, there's some hope in the kind of pro-free trade community and in the corporate world that Democrats, given power in the House, will push back harder on Trump's tariffs and the steel and aluminum tariffs and the trade war with China, and somehow try to reassert power in Congress over tariffs. Obviously, they can't do anything dramatic, given that Republicans will likely have the Senate still. But do you anticipate that any of that would actually happen? Will Democrats try to, you know, force Trump's hand and try to get rid of some of these tariffs, or at least push back harder?
I think you saw the big fight on tariffs, and it frankly fizzled, right? I mean, Bob Corker is retiring, and he was one of the ones leading the charge on this in terms of forcing a Senate vote that would claw back some of this authority that the president is using to impose these tariffs in the name of national security, even though, you know, the national security connections are very tenuous. So, you know, a Democratic House isn't going to be able to really surmount that lack of support in the Senate for checking Trump on this matter. I mean, in Corker's absence, Rob Portman, maybe Pat Toomey, they'll take over the mantle of, you know, the fair trade, anti-tariff, you know, efforts. But I just don't see them going anywhere. And frankly, the reason for that is the same reason that Republicans have been reluctant to check Trump since he took office. It's not good for the party. Unity wins elections.
Yeah. And Megan, I think you were just talking to Rob Portman, Republican of Ohio. Did you get any sense from him that there's going to be a, you know, a robust push to push back on Trump tariffs going forward? It certainly, you know, does seem like the last one fizzled and that there's no inclination among Republicans to really press him. And I can't imagine they're going to want to press him more when they're heading towards 2020.
Yeah, I think that's the issue. I mean, he did talk about his legislation. He was one of the ones that introduced some legislation seeking to sort of reassert Congress's power over the ability to impose tariffs for national security reasons. But I agree with Alana that, I mean, it doesn't seem that there's really a widespread push or enough support among lawmakers to really try to push back against the White House on this one. The one exception I will say is I think we'll probably see this restart, at least the dialogue surrounding it will restart if and when the administration moves forward with tariffs on imports of cars and car parts from other countries besides Canada and Mexico, which they've threatened to do. So that report, I think, is due, can come out anytime between now and February, I think it is. Maybe it's March. And that'll come from the Commerce Department. And if they find the same way that they did with steel and aluminum imports, if they find that they're threatening national security, then they'll likely move forward with tariffs there. And I think that will see a lot of uproar on the Hill, maybe even more than we did when the steel and aluminum tariffs went into effect.
Ilana, before I let you go, I want to talk about Trump's latest fantasy tax cut idea coming out of nowhere. He says he wants to cut all middle class taxes by 10%. And, you know, I wrote with Nancy Cook about this yesterday and the fact that nobody on the Hill had any idea what he was talking about. And obviously, they're not going to do it in a lame duck. And I think it would be incredibly hard to do it next year. What are you picking up on the Hill in terms of like how people are reacting to Trump kind of out of nowhere saying that he's going to give everybody a 10% tax cut?
I mean, I think Republicans on the Hill are cheering the fact that there aren't that many media outlets calling this what it is, which is a fantasy. It's a pretty cynical but unfortunately effective ploy by the White House to start discussing this when we all know that there's no chance that this is going to happen this year. I mean, yes, it's possible we might discuss further breaks for the middle class and the new Congress, but this year is done and dusted. And, you know, Republicans on the Hill know that, but nobody really wants to say it that loudly because the fact is the positive headlines this fantasy is generating are good for their party.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And, you know, I can say that we've certainly written extensively about the fantasy island nature of this tax cut proposal, but it absolutely does get uncritical coverage on Fox and other places. And now we can talk about it on the campaign trail. And that's a subject for an entirely different podcast, but All right, Ilana, Megan, thank you so much for joining us on Politico Money on a busy day. You should check out their reporting on Politico about what might happen if Dems take control of the House in 2019. We appreciate your being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Great to be here.
That's a wrap for the latest Politico Money. Thanks so much to Ilana Shore and Megan Casella for joining us. Thanks to my producer, Jenny Ament. Our executive producer is Dave Shaw. And if you're liking the show, please do rate us and write a written review and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. And we'll see you next time on Politico Money.